Hello and welcome to season two of the Underreported Podcast. I am Melanie, your reporter, and on this podcast, I share stories of crimes committed against Black women and girls because they are underreported in the media. The format of these episodes is that I share a story with you, the audience, and I also have a guest in the studio with me that I share the story with as well. So today, I will be sharing the story with none other than the original co-host, Miss Melissa Fredericks, a.k.a. Miss Kev on stage.
Hello. Thank you for having me back.
Yes. Okay, Liz, again, you already know how this goes. Mm-hmm. You'll be the voice of the people. Respond, react, do all the things that our audience would be doing in hopes that we tell a fuller story and we can highlight these women. So with that, we will get into it. When a woman frantically bursts into the Palmdale police station saying that she has just found her best friend dead, police immediately spring into action. They go and process the crime scene, interview family, friends, and anyone who knew her looking for answers. Their investigation ultimately leads to the arrest of the victim's boyfriend, Lewis. But when Lewis provides an indisputable alibi, police realize that things are not always as they seem. This is the shocking and sad underreported story of Lynell Barsock.
Telling you right now, my immediate mind, oh, it's not the boyfriend, it's the girl who called the police. I'm just telling y'all right now, that's immediately where my mind went to, because it's always somebody you know. Okay.
That is statistically true. Lynell Barsock was a 29-year-old vocational nurse living in Palmdale, California. Palmdale is a little over an hour from LA mm-hmm. without traffic, and it is definitely like suburban, right? Lynell and her Haitian boyfriend of 4 years, Lewis, are living together in the 3,600 square foot home that they purchased in 2009. She is working in her field at a local health center with dreams of becoming a registered nurse. And Lewis is working in maintenance for the city. He works for the city. According to the Peacock series Dateline The Last Day, the two had actually met at school when Lynell was doing her nursing studies and Lewis was studying English as a second language because, like I said, he is Haitian and had immigrated here. So they're at school, classes are ending, and she offers him a ride home after classes and they hit it off. And that was kind of the beginning of their relationship. And again, they had been together, they stayed together for about 4 years. So they're dating and things are going well for a long while. Well enough, again, because they bought a house together, so they like each other a little bit.
Yeah, they're doing well.
And, at some point, things begin to not be so well. Things begin to change in their relationship. Lynell starts telling family and friends that Lewis has a bit of a jealous side. But regardless, the two continue living together and presumably are trying to figure things out. But some of the jealous side that Lynell is telling her family, some of the stories include saying that Lewis has been stalking her, he tracks her phone, he hides out at her job, and she even tells her mom's name is Bobby, that Lewis had even tried to run her off the road once.
Oh, this is more than a jealous side. This is a temper. This is a mess.
All the things. So for some, it wasn't a far leap when they hear that on June 16th, 2010, a woman named Lorene Austin had come racing into the Palmdale police station, frantic and covered in blood, and telling police that Lynell's boyfriend, Lewis, had killed her. Now, there's a lot of L's here. Lynell is the girlfriend. The boyfriend's name is Lewis. And then the friend who came into the police station, her name is Lorene. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Lorene says she tells police that she just left her best friend's house, Lynell Barsock.
Okay.
And when she was there, she found her friend, Lynell, lying dead in the garage. According to, again, Dateline The Last Day, Lorene tells police she had come over her house, came over Lynell's house early that morning around 10 a.m. to finish doing Lynell's hair. She was giving her a sew-in. But when she got there, Lynell and Lewis were arguing again, because they had been arguing because things weren't going so well. They had reportedly been arguing since Monday. So this is Wednesday, the day of. But they had been going back and forth and people were aware that they had been arguing since Monday. And the fight on Monday had apparently gotten so bad that during it, Lynell ended up scratching Lewis's face. So he had a scratch on his face.
Do we know the content of the argument? Are they arguing about cheating? Are they arguing about money?
I'm about to get into it right now.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now, Lewis was jealous and accusatory, but he reportedly had reason to be that way. to be a little insecure. You see, Lewis had discovered that Linnell was, in fact, seeing someone else.
Oh! I thought it was him and he was projecting.
No.
It was her.
It was her.
The whole time.
So in February of 2010, and remember, the police incident, everything happens on June, okay. June 16th. So, but in February of 2010, Linnell had met a man named Ike online, and they had begun seeing each other. He didn't live too far from Linnell, so anytime Lewis wasn't around, Ike was coming around. Ike had even purchased Linnell a phone so that the two could communicate without Lewis knowing. So Lewis finds out about the other man, and that is the result. And what results is him, of course, being upset and them continuing to kind of go back and forth.
So this 3-day argument is specifically when he found out that Linnell was cheating with the dude.
No. So he had already known. Oh. And it had been because leading up to this, they're having these back and forths, and she's saying she's going to leave him alone. And then Lewis finding out she hasn't left him alone. So it's this kind of back and forth situation. So on June 16th, when Lorene arrives to do Linnell's hair, she again discovers that the two are arguing what they've been already doing for months, and they're arguing about Ike. Lorene at this point is kind of over it, and so she's like, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go walk to a nearby park because I'm just here to do your hair anyway. So I'm going to leave, and y'all can kind of talk by yourself and hash things out. So she leaves the house around 1 p.m. Remember, she had gotten there around 10. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming being there listening to the arguments, and decides that she's going to leave around 1. And then she's telling police that she comes back around 6:45, and when she does, that's when she discovers Linnell is in the garage dead, laying in a pool of blood.
Oh, my goodness.
She also tells police that she was actually barefoot. I assume she was, like, in the house searching for Linnell, can't find her, you know. And so she ends up going to the garage. And that's when Joe Espino, who is one of the lead detectives of the case, says that Lorene slipped on something wet in the garage. And so when she slips, she's obviously on the ground. And that's when she sees Linnell is also on the ground. Okay? So she frantically rushes over to her friend, tries to pick her up. And that's how some of the blood got on her. And while she's doing that, she hears what sounds like our footsteps inside of the house. So she cautiously goes inside of the house and looks up and sees Linnell's boyfriend, Lewis, at the top of the stairs. It dawns on her, you killed Linnell.
Yeah, you did it.
So she rushes outside, terrified, jumps into her car, and races to the police station. And that is what got us to the police station.
Got it. When she barges in. She was gone a long time, though. 5 hours is a long time to be gone to let her argument cool off.
Yeah. So during her interview with police, Lorene expresses how heartbroken she is to have just lost her best friend since high school. She says they were always together, hanging out with each other at least 2 to 3 times a week. And with that much interaction, she was able to, like, witness firsthand the kind of deterioration of Linnell and Lewis's relationship. So while this is happening, police are simultaneously beginning their search for Lewis. They're like, he did this murder. We need to find him. And it's not long before they discover that he's actually at Linnell's mother's house, sleep. It's the middle of the night by this point. Oh. So
it's still strange, though. The girl, he didn't go to the police after she died.
No.
He didn't, like, be as hysterical as Lorene, the friend.
No.
Nothing. He just sound asleep, counting sheep.
Yes.
That's strange behavior.
So they bring him in. He has no fight. He just comes in. And they begin their interviews of him. And
what did he tell the mama? Your daughter's dead. I didn't do it. Can I sleep here? No, let's go to the police.
Let me finish.
I'm confused.
So they bring him in and begin their interviews of him. And they also bring in some of Linnell's family and friends. Everyone is kind of confirming the jealousy stories that Linnell had told them about Lewis and the rocky status of their relationship. So when police are interviewing Lewis, they're quite suspicious when he characterizes their relationship as great. He says everything's been fine. So his depiction is much rosier than everything
I wish I had a
that
red
they've
flag.
Heard.
I just want to do this every time you say something so I don't have to say it out loud. I just want to say red flag.
So Lewis claims things, again, are going well. They love each other and they are making plans for their future. So police are like, okay, let's turn up the heat a little bit. So they confront him about Ike, and then they ask him about the scratch on his face. And then they confront him about a letter that they actually found at Linnell's house when they went to the crime scene. It was a breakup letter addressed to Lewis from Linnell, and it stated that she was leaving him for Ike. So Lewis responds, confused. He claims he has no idea what they're talking about. I've never seen any breakup letter. So police are like, all right, let's cut the BS. They ask him directly about Linnell's death. And they're quite taken aback by what they perceive to be genuine shock and heartbreak from Lewis. He begins sobbing uncontrollably. He's inconsolable and asking questions about where she is and who would do something like this to her and why would someone do this to her?
Wait. I feel like I'm missing something. There's no way this is happening. So you mean to tell me that they 1 o'clock they're arguing.
Yes.
Friend leaves.
Yes.
Friend comes back 6:45 later.
Yes.
She comes back, sees him, darts out the door screaming, which I'm presuming is everything and calling you killed my best yes. friend. You are a killer. You are a murderer. And he didn't do a check of the house to find Linnell's body. Mm-hmm. In the garage,
right.
Dead,
right.
In a pool of blood,
correct.
To the point where hours late, he went to the mama's house,
yes.
Didn't say nothing,
no,
because he didn't check. Then goes to the police and is like, oh my gosh, she's dead. I had no idea.
Correct.
I do not believe this at all. There is no world in which you don't. What is this crazy woman yelling that I killed who? Matter of fact, where is she? You got to be kidding me.
So let's listen. Just listen. So police are asking him at this point, since he's so shocked and surprised, what did you do today?
Exactly.
You tell us your version.
Of events.
Of June 16th. So Lewis says that he and Linnell were arguing that morning about the phone Ike had given her. And Lorene did come over around 10 a.m. Linnell had given him the phone that she had gotten from Ike because they're arguing, and she claims it doesn't have any minutes on it. Like, we're really done. You can have it. So Lewis takes the phone and gets in his car. And when he does, he realizes this phone does have minutes on it. You lied to me. So by this time, it's around noon when he was getting in his car, he realizes it. And Lorene and Linnell are heading to the beauty supply store. So he's all riled up because you lied. And so he actually follows them to the store because he wants to argue some more.
Mm-hmm.
At the beauty supply store, they do argue a little bit. But then by 12:40, they had all headed back home. So they leave. They make a couple pit stops, but they leave and head back to the house. And Lewis, he tells police that he's on the road headed to L.A. around 12:40 because he had plans to do some work on his car. So he's like,
I never went back home.
I left. I got on the car. I got in my car after the beauty supply.
He never went home. He went to L.A.
He went home briefly and then got headed to L.A.
Okay, got it.
And everybody was alive when I left.
And then best friend left 20 minutes later?
And then she, according to her story, she left at 1.
But she said they were still arguing when they left at 1.
Exactly. Just listen.
Okay.
So remember, L.A. is a good hour and a half from Palmdale. So when Lewis tells police he was in L.A. at an auto supply store around 2:30, they're like, no, you weren't. And he's like, I have receipts to prove it.
Shut up. He has an alibi that checks out.
So police are intrigued, but not quite convinced, because anybody could have had the receipt. So they conclude their interrogation of him, their interview of him and his events of the day. And they ultimately arrest him for the murder of Linnell.
Right.
So Lewis spends the next few weeks in jail while police continue their investigation. They start with searching his truck and actually end up finding the receipts that he referenced, that there was some LA auto supply stores and that he was supply stores around 2:30 and he had receipts during that time. They also get his phone records, which is a part of the reason he had spent so long in jail, because getting those records takes some time. And when they get those records back, they're baffled to find that it matches his story. The phone was pinging off towers that put him leaving the Palmdale area around 12:40 and being in L.A. around 2:30.
Oh.
Then they get their hands on surveillance footage.
I was just about to ask that. Did they get the CCTV footage?
So they get the surveillance footage from the auto stores, and those show him in the multiple auto
stores
between the hours of 2:30 and 5:30 p.m. Then, through interviews with Linnell's mom, Bobby, they learned that Lewis, because of the drive, he made plans to spend the night at Bobby's house, at Linnell's mom's house.
The whole time.
Because he didn't want to do the long drive back to Palmdale that evening.
She lives in L.A., not in Palmdale.
Yes. And that he actually stayed there. That's where he was, which
and
is why.
And that's why Mama let him stay.
Found.
She didn't ask no question. That's why he was there.
And that's why police found him when they arrested him, or when they brought him in at the mama's house, because that's what he planned to do. So police are like, hold up.
They looking like me.
We got the wrong guy.
We got the wrong guy. Go back to the friend.
So they released Lewis after he was held
didn't
for 6 weeks.
Didn't I say that at the
weeks.
Beginning? I said it was the friend.
He had been held for 6 weeks in jail. And he gets released. And police are like, we got to go back to square one. We got it. Like, we have to look at everything we have again, because this isn't making sense.
Right.
And that's when they remember that when Linnell's mom, Bobby, had come into the police station for her interview, and Loreen was still there because she had been there all night.
Wait, Loreen lied.
Keep listening. Loreen stops Bobby in the hallway at the police station and gives her a hug. Obviously, sad times. This is terrible. And shortly after the hug, Bobby goes to police and she says, who was that woman? And police are like, your daughter's best friend.
From high school.
Since high school. And Bobby's like, I've literally never seen her a day in my life.
Wait, and Loreen lied, because she says she found at 5:30, 4:45, 6 o'clock when she came back, she said she found Linnell dead and said to the boyfriend, you's a murderer, and left. But he wasn't there. He was at the mama's house.
Yes.
So she lied.
She absolutely
lied. Oh, so she did it.
Okay.
Allegedly by me.
So then police began going back over their evidence. And through that, they learned that there was some black latex gloves that was discovered at the crime scene.
Mm.
And after having those analyzed, they learned that it has Loreen's DNA on it. There also was a plastic container from the crime scene that had Loreen's fingerprints on it. And the night that Loreen came into the police station to report Linnell's death, they found two bullets in her purse.
What?
And those bullets matched the type of gun that Linnell was shot with.
Oh, I didn't even realize she was shot.
Oh, I should have said that. They assumed that she had been like bludgeoned to death, but after...
Oh, that's what I thought too.
She actually had been shot in the head.
Oh my gosh.
And the bullets in the purse match, right? So, and Loreen months earlier had purchased the same caliber gun that Linnell was shot with.
Who's Loreen?
Loreen.
I know, but like, who is she?
Got it. So 4 months after Linnell was killed, police get access to Loreen's phone records.
Yes.
Because again, it takes some time.
Mm-hmm.
And they learned that the two, Loreen and Linnell, had actually only known each other for a few weeks. In May of 2010, Loreen had put a woman seeking woman ad on Craigslist, and Linnell responded to the ad. From there, the two developed a sexual relationship, but as time went on, Linnell loses interest in that relationship. So 5 days before she's killed, Linnell sent a text message to Loreen saying, you're really cool, but like, I think we should just be friends. I really want to make things right with Lewis. Like, let's just be friends. Loreen seemed agreeable with her response, but police say that Loreen was actually enraged about the breakup. Loreen, after doing some investigating, police learn that Loreen is in a ton of debt. She lives at home with her mom and hasn't held a steady job in like 2 years.
Mm.
So when she came over on June 16th, she was actually fuming because Linnell was supposed to be her meal ticket, in a way, to the beginning of a better life. And now that was no longer an option. You're working things out with your boyfriend. You ain't trying to be with me. This wasn't the plan. So she waited until after Lewis got on the road to head to L.A. And then police say she held up a pillow while she was doing Linnell's hair, held up a pillow to the back of her head and shot her. And they found the pillow, which had stippling, which, if you don't know, anytime stippling is like a circular ring around a bullet hole, and it indicates
how close. This is like the Melly thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It indicates how close the gun was to where it was shooting. So they say she dragged, after shooting her, she dragged her body through the living room, through the laundry room and into the garage because her initial plan was actually to dump her body in a desolate area. But Lewis calls Linnell's phone around 4:44. Lorene sees the call and assumes that he was calling to say he was headed back home. So she freaks out because she's made a mess and she doesn't have time to put this body in the trunk and drive anywhere. So she decides to, he's on his way home, I'm going to frame him. She writes this breakup letter, acts as if it came from Linnell, and then races to the police station to give her made-up account of what happened.
But he never came home.
After putting the pieces of their story together, police go to arrest Lorene.
How did they figure all that out? Like, she was enraged. She shot. Like, how did they know all?
So after investigating who she actually was and getting access to her phone, and actually they found friends of Lorene's and people that she had been communicating with and brought them in. And one of the interesting on the Dateline documentary episode that I was watching, some of the women that she was also like interacting with and trying to get to know, she had like in a way assumed Linnell's identity. She had told one of them that she had a black BMW, which is the car Linnell had. She told Linnell's middle name was Christy, I think. She told people her name was Christy.
Oh, so strange.
She said like she had taken pieces of Linnell's life and acted as if they were hers.
Wow.
So anyway, through their investigation, they're able to like put together. There also was smears. They did the luminol in the house, and they're able to see smears. And so they were able to understand what
the blood pattern where it traveled.
Body had went. There also was things in the garage. There was like a tire kind of propped, which they assumed was going to be the leverage and the help to get her in the trunk. So they were able to like put the story together.
Got it.
Based off of that. So when they go to arrest her, they can't find her. And for more than a year, they're unable to find her.
She's on the run.
She's on the run. It wasn't until Linnell's case was featured on an episode of America's Most Wanted that someone called in a tip to say that Lorene was living in Belize. And so police find her, arrest her, and extradite her back to
the U.S.
In 2015, Lorene was found guilty of the murder of Linnell Barsock and was sentenced to two consecutive 25-year to life prison terms. So she has to serve a minimum of 50 years before she will be eligible for parole. And that is where she is today.
That was crazy.
Yeah. Very unexpected. Very unexpected.
That was crazy.
And unfortunate. Like, you know, just sad.
I hate, well, all crimes and when someone dies is obviously really sad, but like so senseless, you know, like you like essentially we're thinking the jealousy of him and it's really the jealousy of her friend that strange. That's very strange behavior.
So as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for joining me, Melissa. We send our love and prayers to the family of Linnell Barsock and to anyone that loved her. If you want to support this podcast, please like, subscribe, and tell a friend about it. Until next time.
Bye.